You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romanticy podcast book club. I'm Christina, joined by my book besties, Kim and Anna. And together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books.
Hi, book besties. Welcome to ACOTAR Revisited, our deep dive back into the series that started it all. We are so excited to be here discussing A Court of Wings and Ruin, the third book in the ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas. And just a reminder, we will be breaking up each book into multiple episodes so we can really take our time with this incredible story. Now, with that being said, and because we have read this series multiple times, we will be discussing each book with the knowledge of the entire series. But before we give our official spoiler warning, Kim has some announcements.
I sure do. So before we dive in, a quick reminder that if you love the pod and want even more from your book besties, we have got you absolutely covered over on Patreon. Our tier one book besties at $5 a month get early ad-free access to every episode, plus our monthly book chat episodes, where we dive into a book we are not covering on the podcast, as well as book reviews, behind the scenes of our book bestie reading retreats, plus more. And on our tier two book betches at $10 a month, they get all of that, plus the full unedited video episode of every episode a day early and ad-free, and exclusive access to our SJM series, where we deep dive characters, couples, and scenes from all of Sarah J. Maas's series. We have done everything from deep dives on Moor, Leheba, Starfall, The High Lord's Meeting, and tons of couple favorite moments, as well as our new Trending Pages series, where we spotlight the hottest fantasy reads that everyone is talking about. And last but not least, our Cauldron Chats, where we deep dive ACOTAR characters, lore, and world building as we go on our ACOTAR Revisited journey. So come join our Patreon family over at patreon.com/flightsoffantasypodcast. We would love to have you.
Yes, we would.
And also, our tier two book bitches get a special shout out in one of our episodes. So this week, we are going to be shouting out Helga Marie B, Carissa C, and Morgan Z. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys. It means the world to us.
It does. You guys are the best, and we genuinely could not keep doing this without you. So thank you so much for supporting us. And let's dive in.
Let's go. All right. So spoiler warning from here on out for the entire ACOTAR series. That's A Court of Thorns and Roses, A Court of Mist and Fury, A Court of Wings and Ruin, A Court of Frost and Starlight, and A Court of Silver Flames. Wow.
Yes.
I did not even rehearse that.
Wow. That was good.
So Kim, will you please kick us off?
I sure will. So we are picking up right where we left off in last week's episode. The High Lord's Meeting wrapped up with the King of Highburn using the cauldron to attack the wall. Nesta felt it first, but the attack itself reverberated across Prithian. Now, all the courts are aware of the destruction the King of Highburn is capable of with the cauldron. And as a result, Feyre has to return to her idea of asking all the quote-unquote monsters to help fight on their side. And since she's still very unsure about being able to obtain the Ouroboros mirror, she decides to approach Bryaxis and make a bargain in exchange for Bryaxis's help in defeating Highburn and his army. So her and Amarin go down and have a little chit-chat with Bryaxis, and basically are like, what is it going to take? We want to free you and have you help us in this war. And what does Bryaxis want? A window.
I love that.
That's it, Anna.
I'm sorry, we talked about this already, but she is a Black Panther in my mind. Like, I don't
yes,
know why.
Bryaxis.
She's given strong female energy.
Yes. Strong, like, Black Panther.
Yes, I love
very
it.
Very strong. Yes, yeah. I love that.
I don't know. It's like, there's something, like, cute about it.
Oh, totally.
You know, she's terrifying, but also she just wants a window.
She just wants a window. And I just love Amarin in this scene because Feyre is just like flabbergasted by this request and is basically like, but are you sure that's all you want? Like, do you want anything else? And Amarin's like literally stepping on her foot, like, shut up. The bitch just wants a window. Just give her the window and like, let's move on. You're overselling, Feyre. I just want to watch the stars. And Feyre's like, I don't know. And Amarin's like, a window. We'll give you a window.
Feyre's like, I don't know if I can actually bring the stars into your, like, home. Amarin's like, we'll give you a window.
Shut it, Feyre.
God
bless her, Feyre. But Bryaxis agrees, and now we officially have Bryaxis on her side. Our black cat trio is complete. We've got Amarin, Nesta, and Bryaxis. I refer to them as the unholy trinity, okay?
I love that so much. It's now forever.
They are the unholy trinity.
Yes, they are the unholy trinity.
Terrifying. But very strong and badass.
Yes, very strong and badass.
Okay, what's next, Anna?
Okay, so guys, we have a history lesson with Anna. But today's history lesson is going to focus on theology, specifically the Judeo-Christian religions.
Yes, as we love to talk about.
As we love to talk about, you know? I mean, you thought you were signing up for a fantasy book chat, but no, let's go to Sunday school.
We're going to Sunday school with Anna today.
Here we go. So if you don't remember us mentioning in earlier episodes, SJM does have a minor in religious studies. So it makes total sense that some of her works would feature aspects of that. You know, you write what you know, you pull from what you know. And listen, we know that the topic of religion can be very polarizing, and none of us are particularly religious, but we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we didn't have these discussions. And personally, I love when an author draws from history or ancient texts and seamlessly weaves them into their stories, because once you know to look for them, it becomes a fun little game. And is anyone surprised that I love to suss these things out?
Nope. Detective Anna. I love it.
Okay, so in chapter 27, when Amarin, it was a weird way to say her name.
Amarin.
When Amarin is discussing who and what she used to be in the inner circle, she says this, quote, upon the orders of our ruler, we had just laid waste to twin cities. So I have never picked up on this before, but I was on the lookout this time around for parallels specifically in regards to Amarin.
Right.
And I was like, twin cities, why does that sound so familiar? So I immediately Googled twin cities, biblical.
Love it.
Turns out Sodom and Gomorrah. I was like, that's what it is. So in the Old Testament, there are two twin cities called Sodom and Gomorrah, and they are destroyed by God because of, quote, the human like wickedness.
Yes.
And they are destroyed specifically by fire and brimstone, which pin that for when Amarin comes out of the cauldron in next week's episode.
Yes.
Raining fire and brimstone.
Guys, this blew my mind when Anna told me about this. I was like, are you kidding me? How many times have we read this series? We have never picked up on twin cities, Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yes.
Upon the orders of our ruler.
Our ruler, God. Because she always refers to her ruler as father with a capital F.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I want to point this out now as we move forward through all of these Sunday school lessons. It's on record, Sarah has said that she intended for Amarin to be a sort of biblical archangel of death.
Yes.
That was what her intention was. And when you read Amarin through that lens, all of this kind of pokes through in a very clear way. Mm-hmm. So I want to move on to the next parallel in the book to the Judeo-Christian religion. So Passover is a very heavy theme throughout this book, if you know where to look.
Yeah.
So Passover is a story from the book of Exodus in the Old Testament. It's when the Israelites were enslaved in Egypt and they are finally granted freedom after a series of plagues that were sent by God. Mm-hmm. Now, on the night of the final plague, which is the death of every firstborn child, God instructs the Israelites to mark their doors with lamb's blood so that the angel of death will literally, quote, pass over, hence the name Passover, pass over their homes and spare their children and their families. Mm-hmm. This act of protection and deliverance essentially symbolizes like the liberation from slavery. I also want to point out that in the Christian theology, that Passover lamb and its blood are symbolic of the sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And obviously, if you grew up Christian, Jesus Christ is often referred to as the Lamb of God.
Yes. This is all coming back to me. It's a little triggering.
It's all coming back. We're having, my Catholic confirmation mandatory retreats.
Yeah. I went to an Episcopalian private school. So this is all very like, yes, I do remember this. This is tucked deep in the recesses of my brain. I've tried to let it go, but it's so spot on, you guys. Like, it's just crazy when you read it and you look for these things Anna is talking about. I mean, it's incredible how Sarah weaves this
in. It's very on the nose.
Very.
So remember, what God told the Israelites was to paint their doors with lamb's blood. This is a direct quote from chapter 34, when Amram is going on the hunt to search for like Hibern's armies. It's after the Battle of Adriata. Mm-hmm. And what is said is, they painted their thresholds in lamb's blood, a sort of offering to her and payment to stay away, to quote, Passover. And some left out cups on their doorsteps. Now, SJM could have chosen any form of livestock, and she chose lamb's blood. It's also no secret that from the beginning, when we meet Amram and Achimath, that she drinks lamb's blood. That's her preference.
She says it's her favorite.
It's her favorite, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I also want to point out that at the end of the book, right before Amram jumps into the cauldron, she turns to Pharaoh, and one of the last things she says is, "Tell the High Lord to leave out a cup for me." Now, during Passover Seder, you leave out a cup. It's a gesture meant to welcome the prophet Elijah. Mm. And Elijah is supposedly supposed to herald in the coming of the Messiah. And this is another direct parallel to Passover. I mean, you literally, she's like, leave a cup out for me.
Yes.
We're leaving a cup out for Elijah. Here you go, Amram.
Here you go, Amram.
Be our prophet.
That's incredible.
I know. Truly, there are so many. And we're not done.
I'm not done.
So Passover also is the moment when the Israelites are fleeing from slavery.
Yes.
And they are being pursued by the Pharaoh's army. Mm-hmm. They become trapped between the Red Sea and their enemies. And they are saved when Moses parts the waters, allowing them to cross to safety. And when the Egyptians follow, the sea closes behind them, swallowing them whole, and the Israelites are able to escape. Now, this is literally a direct parallel to the story of Miriam and Draken escaping during the first war.
Yep.
This is the quote from the book when the story is being told.
Incredible.
So they cleaved the sea itself, made a path through the water all the way through the channel, and ordered the humans to run. And just like when the Egyptians chased the Israelites across the Red Sea, the waves end up crashing down upon the opposing Fey army and drowning them.
Yep.
Okay, as if that isn't enough.
Nope, still not done.
We're still not done. So Miriam, mm-hmm. in the story in Akawar, there is also a character Miriam in the Bible, and she is Moses' sister. She is a key integral figure who helps the Israelites escape across the Red Sea.
Yep.
That is literally what Miriam does in the history of the Great War. She leads the humans from slavery, from their Fey oppressors, just like Miriam in the Bible leads the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt.
Yep.
It's so on the nose.
It's literally incredible. It's so fantastic.
I was reading this and I was having, like you said, major flashbacks to Sunday school and all of the songs we used to sing.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Oh my gosh. I was like, trauma.
Do you want to sing any for us right now? Or
I mean, all I can think about are the hymns we used to sing. Like, oh my God, Eagle's Wings. Did you sing that one?
No, maybe.
We will raise you up.
On Eagle's Wings?
On Eagle's Wings. I don't know why.
Why Eagle's Wings?
I don't know. It's a classic Catholic. Listen, I didn't ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, well, sure.
I showed up.
Well, you can't ask a lot of questions, okay?
No, I lied in my confessionals because I was like, why am I telling a strange man?
Yeah, no.
Things that I did wrong. I don't know you.
I don't know you.
I don't know you.
I'm not going to tell you my secrets.
So I lied.
Oh my God.
I was like, I think this says you're supposed to obey your parents. I was like, I disobeyed my parents, which is true. I mean, I guess I didn't lie. I just didn't tell the things I really probably should have confessed.
Well, but why is that any of his business? He's a stranger.
It's not his business. He's a stranger. And he was like, go say Hail Marys. And I was like, joke's on you. I don't know how to say the Hail Mary.
So I'm not going to say it.
So I'm not going to say it. Instead, I'm going to sit here and just think. Until my class tells me it's time to leave.
Oh my God. Incredible. Anna the rebel.
I'm such a rebel.
The Catholic rebel. I love it. Okay. So we are going to go on a little field trip to the human realm next. It's not a pleasant field trip, but we do learn a lot of information.
We do.
Okay. So the group, the whole kit and caboodle, arrives at Grayson's estate, which is Elaine's human fiance for now. And it's tense. Okay. Elaine has been glamored to appear human. And the goal is very simple. They want to plead with Grayson and his father to shelter as many humans as possible from the coming war with Hibern. But the reunion is anything but simple because Grayson essentially, almost from the get-go, is like, yeah, no, you're lying to me. I know that you are Fey and I know that you are mated to a Fey male.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, awkward. And he is very betrayed. He's super angry at Elaine that she would try and deceive him and he refuses to look past what she has become.
Yeah.
And sweet Elaine, she's just so gentle and kind. And she tries to stand her ground, but she is devastated by this rejection. And he's being very cruel to her.
He is.
It's so sad. And just when the emotional sting really settles in, Jurian enters And he reveals that he has been working alongside Grayson and his father from the start, you guys.
I know.
What? This is crazy. I feel like I didn't see this coming. Did you?
No. Okay. So this was actually a plot twist I didn't see coming.
Oh.
I mean, granted, I read it like 12 years ago.
Right.
So I mean,
so like I would have picked up on it now.
I would have picked up on it now. No, I actually don't know. I mean,
no, I don't think. Do you think there were clues?
Well, in the beginning of Akawar, when she's in the Spring Court and he's clearly sympathetic to the humans.
I think so.
But it's very subtle. And the fact that Azriel's wings were, you know, Azriel stabbed and Cassian's wings were shredded at the end of Akamath, that I think would have been really hard for me to get past. And I've been like, no way.
Agreed.
Which, I mean, he still did those things. So I guess we did get past it. But
and we did move on from it. But
we did move on.
I actually really loved rereading this because I felt a lot of sympathy for Jurien, especially what he says about Miriam and Draken and all of that.
Yeah.
So Jurien's there and everyone's like, what the fuck? And Rhysand's like, well, you played the part of the villain pretty convincingly. And Jurien was like, well, yeah. I expected you to look into my mind and to see the truth, Rhysand.
Y'all.
Why didn't you?
I can't.
And Rhysand says it's because I didn't want to see her, Amarantha.
I know.
Which is valid, but also, what is it, Anna?
It's war times, Kim.
It's war times.
It's frustrating because I'm just like, we could have saved a lot of time.
We could.
And effort.
Yep.
And Feyre could have had another ally. I think he even says something like, I thought that me trying to help the children of the Blessed was a big clue to you.
She was like, no, went right over the head.
She's like, I didn't want to see it. I was too blinded by my revenge.
She was in her Reputation era. She was not thinking clearly, okay?
Yes.
This was so interesting. He was like, well, Rhysand, funny you should ask that. I thought you would read my mind, as is your ability as a Daemadi. And Rhysand's like, oh, yeah, no, I didn't do that.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Jurien shares that he doesn't actually want to kill Miriam and Draken. He wants to apologize to them.
Yeah.
Rhysand is still skeptical, obviously. And he's like, well, why now? Why are you helping now? And Jurien says, because the wall came down and now I can move freely to warn the humans here. Because Tamlin ran right back to Hybern after your meeting ended this morning, right to their camp in the Spring Court, where Hybern now plans to launch a land assault on Summer tomorrow.
Mm.
And in order to prove his worth to this group, Jurien tells Rhysand to pass a message along to Cassian, and that is to hammer the left flank of Hybern in tomorrow's battle because it's where the more untrained soldiers will be.
Yeah. This is interesting. The fact that Tamlin ran right back to Hybern, and then we know that he helps rescue Elaine and aids Feyre's escape at the end of the book and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that Jurien doesn't say that he ran straight back to Hybern, and he doesn't say that he told Hybern anything. He just says he ran straight back.
True.
I mean, what else would he be doing?
You're supposed to insinuate that, right.
You're supposed to insinuate that. It's so hard. Which is it?
I know.
Snip, snap.
It's very interesting the way he words that. And Sarah clearly wants us to interpret that as Tamlin is betraying them.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a really sweet moment between, well, really sweet is, the bar is on the ground at this point for Nesta in terms of sweetness, but they won't let them in the castle
yeah.
to see Grayson or whatever, the fortress. And so they have to stay in this little guard stand and it's a tight fit. Okay. It's a tight squeeze because there's the whole inner circle crew plus the guards for Grayson and his father and everything. And Feyre is having a really hard time because she feels like she's back under the mountain. She doesn't like tight enclosed spaces.
Claustrophobic.
Which, same girl, same.
Yeah.
And Nesta notices that Feyre is struggling. And so she looks over at her and she says, I can't get into a bathtub anymore. I have to use buckets.
The use buckets. It goes back to what Feyre says, I think, earlier. Like, we don't know how long she was under there. For us, it was seconds.
Right.
For her, it could have been hours, days, We don't know.
We don't know. And so she shares that very raw, vulnerable piece of herself with Feyre to make Feyre feel better. And it's so sweet. And Feyre's like, when we get home, we'll install something for you.
We'll give you a shower. Girl, just ask for a shower.
We'll give you a shower. God.
I'm just picturing her dumping.
How logistically are we just
logistically, how are we?
I don't know how we're fitting. Is it a large? To me, that's not really that much different than a bathtub.
I'm like, are we sticking our head like upside down, like, you know, scrubbing our hair?
What's happening? How are we rinsing? I don't know.
How are we rinsing?
You know, we're always very concerned about bath time logistics around here.
It's a topic of discussion we have daily.
It is. But that was a really sweet moment. And so Elaine and Grayson are basically, you know, going back and forth, and Grayson says, you belong to him, talking about Lucien, because he knows that Elaine is mated to a female.
Right.
And Elaine says, I belong to no one, but my heart belongs to you. Aww. Grayson's face hardened. I don't want it.
Okay. Well.
Sir?
Sir?
That's rude.
What did she do to you?
She was taken against her will.
She was the one that was traumatized.
Yes.
Turned against her will.
So basically then he says, they'll take in all of the humans that they can, but not you. Never you.
That is... Poor Elaine, she's barely holding on. She's listening to worms slither through the ground.
Yes, it's so sad.
She's unwell.
She's unwell, and she was like so anxious about seeing him, and she still has his ring on, and he starts screaming at her to take it off. And Rhysand's like, all right,
okay,
that's enough. The lady will keep the ring and do with it what she will. Although I do have to say most women prefer gold or silver instead of iron. But like,
I love that.
Basically, Rhysand's like, you're tacky and I hate you.
You're tacky and I hate you.
But like, the lady will keep this disgusting iron ring if that's what she really wants to do. I love that Rhysand's like, all right, that's enough. You're throwing a temper tantrum.
And we're done.
And we're done here. But then fucking Nesta. Okay, so Elaine is sobbing.
Yes.
Because he's screaming at her. And Nesta steps forward and she is so quiet, but so quick. And she slaps him across the face and she said, you never deserved her.
Yes.
Yes, Nesta.
Oh, love this black cat.
This is the black cat energy we love to see. Yes. I just want her to point that anger towards the right people.
Just keep
it
going.
And when she does, I love it. She points that finger at high. I'm into it. She's slapping Grayson. I love it. I'm into it. Yes, Nesta.
Absolutely. Be this badass, angry person. Just channel it at the right people.
Yes. And it's so clear that Nesta is fiercely loyal to the people that she loves.
She is.
And she will ride or die for those people. I mean, especially Elaine. Elaine is.
It escapes us, but.
It does. We don't get it, but we're not her sister. So who's to say?
Who's to say? You know?
Exactly.
Sometimes you got to live with people.
You do. To really know him.
To really, really know him. All right. So we are going to move on to the battle scenes. Guys, there's a lot of battle scenes.
Yeah.
There's quite a few. I mean, I'm 4, five in this book.
Yeah.
Okay. And we're entering into what is all battles from here on out, pretty much. And little skirmishes.
Yeah.
And I just want to kind of talk about them. And SJM writes these scenes with really kind of a beautiful cinematic element to them. She balances the large-scale chaos with deeply personal moments. And I feel like it's really woven very well, you know, as a reader.
Yeah.
The final stretch of Akawar, it's so much fun, especially to read Cassian and Azriel in their element, which I feel like we haven't seen.
Yeah.
You know, that talks about the Illyrian wings cutting through the sky, their siphons are blazing, etc.
Yeah.
But Feyre reflects on how it's a very stark contrast between the earlier ambush in Adriada when Hybern attacked, and this kind of open field warfare, which I got to imagine is very different. You know, one is very close encounter and, you know, there was a lot of terror and confusion in Adriada and it was a surprise attack, right? And civilian casualties. So there's kind of a more of a will to defend those that can't defend themselves.
Sure.
But these types of final battles in the end of the book feel much more primal.
Yeah.
There's very specific lines are drawn. The armies are charging at each other. It's death in broad daylight.
Yeah.
It feels messier in an odd way, even though to me it sounds like Adriada would seem more messy and confusing, but I think the aspect of having to defend those who can't defend themselves, it makes it easier to swallow for Feyre.
Right.
And she still, I mean, she vomits at the end of Adriada.
She does.
I mean, it's not easy.
Sure.
But in this chapter, in chapter 56, we really get our first true taste of full-scale war.
Yeah.
And it's a hard-won victory, but they do win. And Rhysand steps aside and he offers Tarquin the final justice for what was done to his people earlier in the book in Adriada.
Yeah.
And Tarquin, guys, he uses his summer court magic and he drowns the Hybern army on dry land.
Yeah.
It is brutal. And it's a great reminder that it's not just Rhysand who has these incredible powers, but this young High Lord. He's 80, which is basically a bebe.
He's a tiny bebe compared to everybody else.
Yeah. And he showcases this extreme amount of power and drowns. There is no mercy. I think they pull a few for questioning.
Yeah.
And then he drowns everybody else on dry land.
Yep.
And Feyre at first looks around and she's like, what is happening? Why are they all like gagging? It's gross.
It's intense, but it's more times, you guys.
It's like, more times.
And you know what? They attacked Tarquin and his people, and I love that Rhysand offered it to him.
Yeah.
He just wants to be his friend so bad that this is his, like, hey, like, do you want to take and kill them all? I'll let you do it if you want to. Like, you can if you want to, but like, I don't know. And then we could get a drink after and talk about it. I don't, whatever you want to do.
Or not talk. We can just like sit there.
Right. We could just sit in silence. Like, it's cool. Like, it's just, Rhysand just wants a friend, you guys.
He wants a friend so badly.
He wants a High Lord friend.
He does. And I think him and Tarquin would get along.
I do too.
Yes. I mean, Tarquin did rescind the blood rubies. So
he did.
Hey.
So they're basically friends now.
They're basically besties.
Yeah.
We just need Cassian's to be rescinded.
Yeah. We do need the band.
It was just a small building.
It was just one building, you guys. Stop overreacting. It's fine.
I love it. But speaking of Cassian, I loved getting these quotes of him fighting. We've heard about the Lord of Bloodshed. He's the general of the armies. And we've never seen him in action, obviously, until now.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this quote. Cassian stepped out of that impenetrable front line of shields and swords, the soldiers around him immediately closing the gap. Mud and blood splattered Cassian's dark helmet, his armor. He ditched his tall shield for a round one strapped across his back, crafted from the same ebony metal, and then he launched into a run. And there's so many other great quotes.
It's so cool.
But the best part is after the battle is over, Nesta is walking around the camp and she's filling jugs of water and buckets of water. She's trying to be helpful.
She is.
She actually is.
She really is.
And the quote is, Nesta listened to the low-level Illyrian soldiers whispering about how Cassian had thrown that spear, how he'd cut down soldiers like stalks of wheat, how he'd fought like Enelas, their most ancient warrior god and the first of the Illyrians. It had been a while, it seemed, since they had seen Cassian in open battle, since they'd realized that he'd been young in the war. And now, the looks they gave Cassian as he passed, they were the same as those the High Lords had given Rhys upon seeing his power. Like them. And yet other. I love this.
I love this. And also this reminds me of, okay, so like Nesta keeps coming back to refill the buckets. She's kind of eavesdropping.
It's so funny.
Reminds me of the scene of Angela from The Office when Dwight pepper sprays Roy because he's about to attack Jim.
Yes.
And Angela like the next day goes around and she's like, I wasn't there. Can you tell me what happened?
Yeah.
How did the battle go? How did the fight go? I don't know. I wasn't there. She has like five different people.
She's like so clearly turned on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's into it.
So then what did Dwight do?
Yeah. And then what happened? But like, I don't really care, but like, I just wanted to know.
Just in case others are asking.
Yeah, I just like, I need to be able to relay the info, even though we were all basically there. It's giving Nesta's like,
yeah.
Oh, what? Oh, let me just, I got to refill this bucket.
She's like, this is my spank bank.
For oh, absolutely. This is foreplay for Nesta. Yeah. She's like, yes, violence, bloodshed.
Violence. Listen, they deserve each other.
Oh, they're perfect for each other.
I mean, the Lord of Bloodshed and the Goddess of Death. Truly.
Truly a match made in heaven.
Match made in heaven.
Or hell or something. But yeah, we don't know.
We don't know.
So we have another battle scene and this one drags on and it becomes pretty clear that Highburn is gaining the upper hand. And Cassian, Azriel, and Rhysand are nearly drained. So Feyre decides to be sneaky and she essentially baits Mor into entering the battle so that she can slip away unnoticed and track down the one being who may hold all the answers, our favorite gossip girl, the Surreal.
I love it.
So Elaine is actually able to track down the Surreal's location using her seer abilities, which is very convenient.
Mm-hmm.
And Feyre winnows directly there. And our gossip girl delivers two very important bits of information. The first one is to use a scrying method. And if Nesta uses the scrying method, she can track the cauldron and the Highburn army because, quote, like calls to like. So because Nesta was made by the cauldron, she will be able to track the cauldron.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. But also the Surreal delivers a final riddle riddle, this time for Amryn. Tell the silver-eyed messenger that the answer lies on the second and penultimate pages of the book. Together, they hold the key. But before Feyre can even ask the key to what, a sickening snap echoes through the woods. The Suriel has been shot with an ash arrow. And just like that, the one creature that has always helped Feyre is dying in her arms.
Oh, guys, this was... Every time I read this scene, it hits me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it hits me harder when Feyre comes back later. But the ash arrow hits and Feyre is devastated.
Yes.
And the Suriel, the kind, strange creature that always told her the truth. I feel like they became buddies, you know?
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah.
It's a scary, big, weird-looking creature, but it was sweet, and they had some sort of camaraderie.
They had a connection, for sure.
And guys, it's fucking Ianthe.
Oh, bitch.
This garbage trash whore. I hate her.
So, I'm like, of course it was you. Of course it was you. You're the fucking worst.
And after some back and forth, Feyre realizes that the cloak that the Suriel is wearing, because if you remember, listeners, one of the ways to catch a Suriel is to offer it a cloak. Mm-hmm. And so the Suriel is wearing a new cloak, and it was one that was actually given by Ianthe. And it has a tracking spell that was activated when Feyre arrived. Yes. And she can't let the Suriel's death be for nothing. So she leads Ianthe deep into the middle, right to the Weaver's cottage.
Yeah, she does.
She lures Ianthe and the Hybrid Foot soldiers into the cabin. And when the Weaver asks, "Who did you bring me, little wolf?" Feyre replies, "Dinner." And then she slams the door and she runs out of the cottage.
Yes.
And Ianthe, you just hear screaming.
That's right.
I love that Ianthe's demise is by a creature that sucks the beauty out of people.
Yes.
It is so perfect for her.
Oh, I love that. Yes,
somebody who is so vain.
Oh, so vain.
And narcissistic.
And she uses her looks to prey on people.
Yes.
And take advantage of them.
Yes.
And so for her to then have that taken away from her in such a violent way is the perfect end for her. I literally could not have written this better, and I love it.
I love it. It's so good. So Feyre returns to the Suriel, and she realizes there's nothing to be done. The Suriel is dying.
Yeah.
Guys, the Suriel says, "Stay. Stay until the end." And the Suriel admits that it knew that there was a cloaking spell, and Feyre can't believe that the Suriel would risk its life to still come and speak to her, even though it knew the spell might be activated.
Sure.
And what the Suriel responds is, "You were kind. You fought your fear. You were kind." And then Suriel delivers the final cryptic little message.
Yep.
She repeats the phrase from book one, "Stay with the High Lord and live to see everything righted." And Feyre's confused, and she's like, "Well, no, I already did that. Have you been watching?"
We've actually already talked about this. Yes. I don't know if you remember. Yeah. I know you're dying, but you did already tell me that.
Yes, and I did, and we're together.
Right.
And the Suriel follows up, and it says, "No, not yet. Stay with him." Which is clearly foreshadowing the end of the book.
Absolutely. Clearly.
But the final quote from the Suriel is, it's so beautiful. It's so heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It says, "Feyre Archeron," the Suriel said again, gazing at the leafy canopy, the sky peeking through it, a painful inhale. "A request." I leaned close. "Anything." Another rattling breath. "Leave this world a better place than how you found it." And as its chest rose and stopped altogether, as its breath escaped in one last sigh, I understood why the Suriel had come to help me again and again. Not just for kindness, but because it was a dreamer. And it was the heart of a dreamer that had ceased beating inside that monstrous chest.
Oh.
Y'all, moment of silence for the Suriel.
Absolutely.
It's like another dreamer in a court of nightmares. And I just...
Yes.
I love it so much. And it was. It wanted to leave the world a better place than how you found it.
Yes. And it did help Feyre over and over. It makes me so sad, because what could it have been if the Suriel could have been a part of the inner circle, you know?
I know.
I don't know if they were accepting applications or like if the Suriel would have been a good fit personality-wise. I don't know. But it's such a sweet, touching moment for a character that you have been terrified of the entire series.
Yes.
And the way that Feyre is able to humanize the Suriel to the point where you are sad for its death is such a testament to her writing.
She does it, and we'll see it later. She does it with the Bone Carver, I think, in a way. She does it with Bryaxis. She humanizes.
Yeah.
I think the Weaver is like the only one we don't humanize, and that's fine.
And I'm good with that.
I'm good with that.
I don't think we need to do that.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
But anyways, Hellion ends up tracking Feyre down because Rhysand is like, where the fuck is my wife? Where is my mate?
Yes.
And so Hellion's the one that ends up finding her. And Feyre asks him to burn the Suriel's body with his power, you know, the power of the sun.
Yes.
But before he does, she takes Ianthe's cloak off because fuck that bitch.
Yeah, fuck her.
And she requests Hellion's cloak. And then she covers the Suriel in a new cloak and then burns the Suriel with the light of day. And it's a beautiful moment. And it's so sad. Feyre is very upset about it. I mean, she arrives back and she crumples into Rhysand's arms and sobs.
Yeah, it's very sad.
It was one of the first creatures that I really actually gave her, well, I mean, it was cryptic, but it gave her answers and was always truthful, like she says.
Definitely. Okay, so we are going to do a little Nesta and Cassian mate watch, everybody.
Yay, my favorite.
This is actually after one of the earlier battles, and Cassian's kind of minorly injured, and Nesta finds him, and she's helping patch him up. So the quote is, Cassian seemed too weary to speak as well while she wrapped bandages around his wrist, only grunting to confirm if it was too tight or too loose, if it helped at all. But he watched her, didn't take his eyes off her face, the brows bunched and lips pursed in concentration. And when she'd tied it neatly, his wrist wrapped in white, when Nesta made to pull back, Cassian gripped her fingers in his good hand. She lifted her gaze to his. Thank you, he said hoarsely. Nesta did not yank her hand away, did not open her mouth for some barbed retort. She only stared and stared at him, at the breadth of his shoulders, even more powerful in that beautiful black armor, at the strong column of his tan neck above it, his wings, and then at his hazel eyes still riveted to her face. Cassian brushed a thumb down the back of her hand. Nesta opened her mouth at last, and I braced myself. You're hurt? At the sound of Moore's voice, Cassian snatched his hand back and pivoted toward Moore with a lazy smile. Nothing for you to cry over, don't worry. Nesta dragged her stare from his face down to her now empty hand, her fingers still curled as if his palm lay there. Cassian didn't look at Nesta as she rose, snatching up the pitcher, and muttered something about getting more water from inside the tent. Cassian and Moore fell into their banter, laughing and taunting each other about the battle and the ones ahead. Nesta didn't come back out again for some time.
That is basically an I love you from Nesta.
Nesta's like, I'm in love with
you. I mean, I don't know if that was obvious, but that's how I feel.
I felt I was very clear by staring at you and not yanking my hand away. That's me saying, I have feelings for you. I'm feeling something here.
It's such a sweet moment. And I love how we get to see only Cassian brings this side out of her, which
that's right.
Mates.
Total mates.
I mean, total mates.
So Nesta, so just as the Suriel suggested, they get Nesta the necessary items for her to scry so that she can search out the cauldron and Hybern's army. Mm-hmm. It works, but she does unfortunately go in too deep and the cauldron gets a look at where she is, aka where their whole group is.
Yeah.
Which leads us to Elaine's capture. Anna, will you walk us through that?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. So I'm going to quickly run us through the capture and then we'll chat about it after.
Okay.
So Feyre, Nessa, and Amarin are jolted awake. Okay, something feels off. All three of them rush out of their tents. They quickly assess that there's actually no immediate attack and they're starting to shrug it off. But Nesta, of course Nesta, Nesta realizes, she's like, wait a second, Elaine is gone. Oh dear.
Of course.
She's been taken. Hybern has somehow breached their defenses and stolen her from right under their noses.
Yeah.
And Feyre is forever the protector of her family, is like, not today, Satan.
That's right.
No, no, no.
No, no.
I am putting a plan into motion and I am going to get my sister back.
Mm-hmm.
So what she does is she disguises herself as Ianthe using a magical glamour. Thank you, magical powers from the Spring Court, shapeshifting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tamlin.
Thank you, Tamlin. Finally being useful.
Finally. So Azriel ends up going with her and together they infiltrate Hybern's camp and they walk straight into enemy territory.
Yep.
Feyre plays the role perfectly. She pretends to flirt with Jurian and he knows that it's actually Feyre.
Yeah.
And he's telling her where they're keeping Elaine.
Yeah.
And I love this. Jurian is like, listen, you've been lusting after me for weeks, so act like it. To like Ianthe. And Feyre's like, got it, noted. So she's
got
like petting him.
Yeah.
And she turns to the guards because Elaine is being kept in the same tent as the cauldron. And so Feyre's like, you know, before I have hot, sweaty sex with Jurian, I just need to pray before the cauldron and thank the mother.
Yes, for this gift of sex.
Gift of sex.
It really just gets me going.
It's so good. And so the guards are like, all right, whatever, weirdo.
Okay, weirdo.
So long story short, they break Elaine out and they also take a young human woman who was being held prisoner.
Yeah.
And as they escape, Qyburn sends his hounds after them, these big, scary, monstrous, magical hounds.
Mm-hmm.
And Azrael is severely injured, which is important because he ends up not really being able to fight in the final battle until he says, fuck you to Rhysand.
Oh, right.
And Elaine can barely stand. You know, she's weak from being held captive.
That's right.
And Feyre is nearly spent from using her magic to hold the glamour and trying to fight off the hounds.
Yes.
But then, just as Feyre is about to be attacked, a giant beast comes ramming into one of the hounds, and it's Tamlin.
Yeah.
Which is shocking to everybody, especially Feyre.
The shock of the century, yep.
And not only does he fight against Qyburn, but just as Azrael and Feyre are jumping off the cliff, mm-hmm. Feyre is having to use her wings really for the first time. Because remember, she's had those training lessons, but she's not very good at it yet.
It's not going well.
And so she's trying, and Azrael is severely hurt with his wings.
Yes.
And so he's like, I actually can't carry you plus these two other women that I'm already holding.
Yep, can't do it.
Can't do it. So she takes off and she's like, well, I'm either gonna fly or I'm gonna die.
Right.
That is it.
That's it.
And she feels a breeze, a spring breeze that lifts her up just so they can get outside of Qyburn's magical barriers and their wards.
Yeah.
And they're able to winnow back to the Night Court camp, the war camp.
Yeah.
And it's a great moment. And I want to pause here to talk about a possible Tamlin redemption arc.
Yes. I think Feyre is definitely setting up for this, between this and obviously the gift that he gives to save Rhysand later, which we'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she's definitely setting up for it. And I think I'm fine to read that if that's what she wants to do. And I don't think it's going to be like Elaine and Tamlin end up together.
No, I don't think it's going to be even, it might not even be a full redemption arc, because I think that would require an entire book. And I don't know that Tamlin is getting a book. I don't know that everybody, I mean, there are people out there who want to read a Tamlin book.
Yo, yeah, there are.
Not me.
Not us.
Not us.
No, I don't think she would devote. I think it would be like a C plot.
Exactly. I think at the end of the book, he's gotten to a place where he's like, be happy, Feyre.
Yes.
And I think he recognizes that, okay, he might not ever be the male that, I think Aerys is honestly on a better path for a redemption arc than Tamlin is. I think Tamlin, that was kind of his redemption.
Yeah.
And I think he's a very broken man that we'll see in A Court of Silver Flames. I mean, the Spring Court's in disarray.
Yeah.
And I think if anything, his redemption might end up being like a sacrifice of some kind.
I could see that.
You know?
I could see that.
I don't know that we're going to get like a full story.
No, I don't think so. And I would rather see an Aerys redemption arc than I would Tamlin. I think Aerys is a much more interesting, layered, nuanced character than Tamlin. Well, number one, they're not real, guys, so don't get upset. Also, I didn't write it. Feyre did. I'm just saying, I think that Feyre has given us more. It's like Elaine and Nesta, you know, like we were given more to work with Nesta. So naturally we're more interested in her because she's a very complex character. And Aerys is very complex. And there's clearly a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yes, so much.
And with Tamlin, it's like, I don't like him, but I don't want him to be miserable forever. And if we get a couple sentences or like a very minor side plot about him being happy, then great.
I think we've spent three books really seeing him through the eyes of Feyre. And I think the difference is with Aerys, we're getting nuggets, but we don't know the truth. All we see is, like he says, we are not all as lucky as our friends and family, Rhysand. And we see how terrible the Autumn Court is and what's happened to the Lady of the Autumn Court and what's happened to Lucien.
Mm-hmm.
And we know Aerys tried to, we suspect based on what he says, if we're to believe him, that he tried his best to get, he helped Lucien escape. He didn't want what happened to Mor to happen to Mor.
Yes, yes, yes.
There's aspects of his character that feel, like you said, more layered, more nuanced. He's an onion.
He is an onion.
And I think with Tamlin, unfortunately, we've seen so much of him already throughout the series that I don't really need there to be like a huge plot around him.
And I don't think that's what she's doing.
No, I don't think so.
I think she's really done most of what she's going to do with Tamlin. Like, I think him doing this and then giving the drop of his power at the end of the book and saying, be happy, Feyre. And Feyre says, be happy back to him. Like, I kind of feel like that's it.
Yeah.
I agree that maybe he might help in a future book or something like that in terms of to move the plot along. But I don't think there's going to be this big storyline.
Yes.
But there is an interesting note about the girl that they, the human girl that they rescue, Briar.
Yes. There is a theory that because her name is literally just because her name is Briar.
Which, okay.
I mean, it's a little stretch, but it is funny. But people think that if there was a storyline about to happen, that she could be Tamlin's mate because she's human and it mimics Feyre, and also that Briar is like Briar Rose and the Spring Court and the roses.
Yes.
It's just a fun little theory that's floating around out there. I mean, again, I think that would be a lot to try and work into a book, but
agreed.
It's fun to know.
It is.
Okay, I also do want to say this. Elaine shows a bit of backbone here for the first time.
She sure does.
And it foreshadows what happens at the ending. She is on the back of Azrael, but she turns around and she starts whacking the hounds as they attack, and she uses her little face strength.
Yes!
And I'm just like, all right, we're seeing a little glimpse. Go, Elaine.
Go, Elaine! I love that for her.
I also want to back up to this quote from Rhysand right before Feyre takes off to go rescue Elaine with Azrael.
Yes.
And what he says to her as she's getting ready to go is he says, do not get distracted, do not linger. You are a warrior, and warriors know when to pick their fights. I nodded, our breath mingling. Rhys growled, they took what is ours, and we do not allow those crimes to go unpunished. His power rippled and swirled around me. You do not fear, you do not falter, you do not yield. You go in, you get her, and you come out again. Remember that you are a wolf, and you cannot be caged. I, like, yes, daddy.
Yes, daddy.
Sexy to me. God love this.
Damn it, he's so sexy.
It's so hot. You do not fear. You do not falter.
Oh, my God. I love it.
And you do not yield. Pin it. Pin it. Mastermind
Pin
next
that
week.
Phrase for mastermind next week.
Oh, my God. I love it so much. Okay, so we also have the sister reunion after Elaine.
Oh, I love this.
Gets rescued. This is a really sweet moment with, again, Nesta.
Damn it.
Sarah, you genius. So it says, Nesta rounded a tent, skidding to a halt in the mud. She let out a sob at the sight of Elaine, still in Azrael's arms. I'd never heard a sound like that from her, not once. She isn't hurt, I said to her, into that chamber in her mind, because words, I couldn't form them. Nesta broke into another sprint. I reached for Rhysand, his face taut as he stalked for us, but Nesta got there first. I swallowed my shout of pain as Nesta's arms went around my neck and she embraced me so hard it snatched my breath away. Her body shook as she sobbed and said over and over and over, thank you.
Why am I crying over Nesta? What the fuck, Sarah?
I'm telling you, Sarah sets this up so well.
Oh, God.
So that then when we have her breaking at the end of this book, leading us into Akasoff and what she does, you know, with Cassian and in the novella and then setting us up in Akasoff, we see what it could be.
Yeah.
And then we see how dark it could be.
Yeah.
And it really sets it up so beautifully.
It does. It is such a roller coaster with Nesta from here on out.
Truly.
But this scene is so sweet because we all think Nesta's running toward Elaine, right? Because of course she is. She's obsessed with Elaine. She's going to just run right past Feyre, who went and got her, and go to Elaine. And so Feyre's like, I'll go to Rhysand, you know? And she goes to Feyre first and she grabs her and says, thank you.
I feel like that has to be so healing for both of them.
Oh, God.
You know?
So sweet. And so all three of them go together into a tent and they curl up on like a little camp bed together. Mm. And Feyre says, I didn't know how long my sisters and I lay there together, just like we had once shared that carved bed in that dilapidated cottage. Then, back then, we had kicked and twisted and fought for any bit of space, any breathing room. But that morning, as the sun rose over the world, we held tight and did not let go. Oh, this callback to them in the cottage where they were so miserable, they were so angry, they were so broken.
Yeah.
That callback to them all voluntarily choosing to snuggle together in this bed together in the midst of this war and hold on to each other is such a beautiful, beautiful scene. I love it so much.
I love it so much. And they're in such a different place than they were, obviously, at the beginning of ACOTAR and how far we've come with the three of them, especially Elaine then at the end of the book being more bright and more cheerful, although Nesta is broken at the end of this book. But we're seeing, like I said earlier, we're seeing what could be.
Yeah.
And it's that we hold on to as we go into Akasoff.
Absolutely.
Think about the last time you had a cancel subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
So we want to touch upon this kind of next big reveal, which is Moore's sexual preferences. But first, we have to set the stage because prior to that very important conversation, Moore and Feyre have a fight.
Yes.
And it is right after Feyre returns from the Suriel dying and Moore is pissed. She's pissed because Feyre lied to her and baited her to go into battle so that she could sneak off and meet with the Suriel. And Feyre recognizes the hurt that caused, but she's also pissed at Moore. And Moore says, "You are my high lady. Do you understand what it means when you imply you don't trust us to help you, to respect your wishes if you want to do something alone when you lie to us?" Which Cassian says something similar to Feyre earlier in the book, where he's like, "You're our high lady too. It's our job to protect you. It's not just about you being Rhysand's mate.
Yeah.
You are my high lady." And Moore is essentially saying the same thing.
Yep.
And Feyre comes back to that and says, "Do you want to talk about lying? How about the fact that you lie to yourself and all of us every single day? Why haven't you ever made a move for Asriel, Moore? Why did you invite Hellion into your bed? You clearly found no pleasure in it. I saw the way you looked the next day. So before you accuse me of being a liar, I suggest you look long and hard at yourself." Ooh!
Y'all.
Feyre.
This is very Nesta energy.
Yes.
You know, she is not holding back. She is not pulling punches. And I mean, she's saying what we've all been thinking.
Right.
Like,
she's not wrong.
Not wrong. I mean, it's like, girl, this poor man.
For sure. Oh, for sure.
What are you doing?
It's super shitty.
Yeah.
So that is kind of where Feyre and Moore left things before Feyre and Asriel go off to rescue Elaine.
Yes.
And it really guts Moore that she thinks that the last words Feyre may hear from her are like her kicking her out of her tent after their fight. Because she basically tells Feyre, she's like, "Get out." And then Feyre leaves and then they go rescue Elaine.
Yes.
It's definitely very sister-like.
It's a very sister fight.
Yeah.
Okay, so obviously Moore, so we fast forward after we rescue Elaine,
mm-hmm.
and Feyre and Moore find each other and they want to have a talk.
Sure.
And obviously Moore coming out to Feyre is a very big topic of conversation in the fandom. And if you're new to this world, this fandom, just trust us when we say it's discussed a lot and people have very big feelings about it.
Yes.
We're not here to dismiss anyone, and we are straight, heterosexual, cis women.
Yes.
Who have zero idea what it's like to walk in those shoes, to hide yourself from people and to be concerned about whether or not you'll be accepted. And I'm sure there's a plethora of other reasons that we honestly have never had to consider.
Yeah.
And yes, this is a fictional character,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't take away from the fact that fiction can still impact you in a very, very real way.
Yes.
So we are entering this conversation with the hope that we're being very cognizant of people's real life experiences. And we are going to start off by reading some quotes from the chapter when Moore finally reveals her truth. And then we're going to break it down.
Okay.
So Moore is giving a lot of history. And this is part of what she says is, "But this part of me," Moore wiped at her tears with her free hand, "it didn't matter as much when my family disowned me, when they called me a whore and a piece of trash, when they hurt me, because those things, they weren't a part of me, weren't true, and weren't intrinsic. They couldn't break me because they never touched that innermost part of me. They never even guessed, but I hid it. I've hidden it because..." She tilted her head back, looking skyward. "Because I live in terror of my family finding out and shaming me, hurting me about this one thing that has remained wholly mine, this one part of me. I won't let them destroy it." And then she follows up with, "My gift is truth, and yet I have been living a lie my entire existence."
Wow.
And it's a really heavy, beautiful moment.
Yeah.
And it makes sense to us that, you know, what she says is that, "I don't care. They can call me every name in the book because those things sticks and stones."
Mm-hmm.
"But this part of me is so intrinsic that if they were to attack that part of me, I think that would break me."
Yeah.
And, you know, as a reader reading that and seeing what Kira, I mean, her father nailed a letter to her womb.
Absolutely.
And sent her back to the Autumn Court.
Yes. That part definitely tracks with me. And I don't think she's under any obligation
100%.
To come out to her family or anybody in the Hewn City or anything like that.
She doesn't owe them anything.
No. And if I had her family, I wouldn't tell them shit. I wouldn't tell them my favorite color. So I certainly don't fault her there.
Yeah.
It's more just in regards to Asriel is where I start to have some issues.
Yes. And so here is the conversation that she has about Asriel.
Yeah.
Feyre is a back and forth conversation with her and Feyre. And Feyre says, "Do you think Asriel suspects?" "Maybe. I don't know. He's too observant not to. But I think it confuses him whenever I take a male home." And Feyre follows up with, "So this thing with Hellion, why?" And Moore says, "He wanted a distraction from its own problems. And I, Whenever Azriel makes his feelings clear, like he did with Aerys. It's stupid, I know. It's so stupid and cruel that I do this, but I slept with Hellion just to remind Azriel. Gods, I can't even say it. It sounds even worse saying it. And Feyre responds, to remind him that you're not interested. And Mor says, I should tell him. I need to tell him. Mother above, after last night, I should. But it's gone on for so long. So long, I'm petrified to face him, to tell him that he spent 500 years pining for someone and something that won't ever exist. The potential fallout. I like things the way they are. I think this is what's really hard as the reader, because this is honestly, it's an issue I have more with Sarah too, because I think Sarah has built this book up. The first two books that we've, or the first times we've seen Mor and Azriel together, there are clear looks between them that is hard to interpret any other way than possible feelings.
Absolutely.
Obviously on Azriel's end, but even on Mor's end, especially in Akamath.
Absolutely.
And this is one of the things that is hotly discussed in the fandom, is at what point did Sarah, did she change her mind? Did she always want Mor to be gay or bi? At what point did she make that change? Or was that always her intent? Because it wasn't...
It doesn't read that way.
It doesn't read that way. And I think that's what feels so abrupt.
I think a lot of the fandom feels like Sarah basically was getting pushback on the lack of diversity in her books and felt like, well, who can I make a part of the LGBT community? Like, who could I make gay? Oh, okay. Well, they don't really know anything about Mor, so let's just make her gay.
Yeah.
And it, you could interpret it as feeling like a cop-out and Sarah going a different direction and then taking everything that she's already written in and basically being like, oh, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, but there were so many moments, like you said, Anna, that she wrote in that's like, well, how else would we interpret that?
Yeah. And Mor being gay, fine.
Oh, of course.
I think it's the 500 years when she's built a family. She has a family that you know would love and accept her.
Yes.
You know, I don't even think coming out to them would be a thing. I think they don't care. They just love Mor for who she is and what she is and the person she is inside. And I think that's what's really hard, is you see this loving circle of friends who forgive each other and love each other unconditionally, and you have this 500 years of pining, which also I do have to point out, Azriel. Dude, move on.
You've like, got to move on. Like, it's
stage 5 clinger.
Absolutely. But that then makes me wonder, has Mor been, why hasn't he moved on? Why hasn't Mor put a stop to it at this point?
Yeah.
If she knows that she's never going to return those feelings.
Because sleeping with men is clearly not getting the message across.
Right. Yes. Because they are still exchanging these glances.
Yeah.
Bottom line, to me, it feels disingenuous for Mor not to have told the inner circle.
Yeah.
Not to have even just Rhysand.
Just Rhysand.
Or just Amarin.
Yeah.
Or any one of them.
Yeah.
If she didn't feel comfortable telling all of them, that's fine. But the fact that she wouldn't have told Rhysand, to me, just does not track with everything that we know about the inner circle and the love and pure acceptance and support that they have for each other.
Yeah.
That's what makes me think that SJM changed her mind about Mor and that she was wanting to go a different direction with Mor and Azriel. And then when she needed a character to be gay or bi, she chose Mor and then basically was like, we're going to go this way. And it just feels like a hard pivot.
It does feel like a hard pivot. That's a good word.
And I just don't see a world where she would for 500 years not tell anybody in the inner circle.
Yeah.
Because what reason have they given her not to? And again, that's obviously her prerogative. I'm not saying like...
It's absolutely her prerogative.
Even if you feel loved and accepted, I'm not saying that, you know, you do that on your own time, but it's just Sarah has made it such a point to write these people that they are so close and they spend every day together and they're a family. The word family is used a million times and it doesn't make sense to me as the reader. I don't see why she wouldn't have told them.
I think that's what it is. It's not that Mor took her time to tell somebody. Mm. That's fine. Like you said, that's her prerogative. That's her story. It's her journey.
Of course.
But it's that it feels, the best word is hard pivot. It just feels abrupt.
Yeah.
And kind of out of left field.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think it's hard to swallow then as the reader, because 500 years is not a little time.
No.
It's a lot of time.
It's a very long time.
I mean, even in Fae, that's a long time.
Even for an immortal, that is even a very, very long time to keep something like that and to let someone pine for you that way.
That's, I think, that's what is hard.
Without having the respect for him as your friend.
Don't tell him you prefer women.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Just tell him I'm not interested.
I love you as a friend.
I love you as a friend.
And I'm not interested.
This would get too messy. We're practically siblings at this point.
Right.
That's all you have to do. Honestly, that's what bugs me the most. Mm. Like she says, I think it confuses him when I sleep with men. It's like, well, yeah, of course it confuses him.
Of course it does. More.
I don't know how else he's supposed to take that.
Yeah, of course it confuses him because y'all are exchanging these loaded glances and there's tension and there's clearly something going on with you guys, but you won't make it clear that you're not ever going to be with him.
But anyways, it's a big moment and it's an important moment for Moore. It's an important moment for Feyre too, for the two of them in their relationship, because I think Moore is the sister she always wished she'd had.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's why it hurt so much when they fought and Moore said those things and kicked her out of the tent. And then I think Moore, I have no idea what it is about Feyre that makes Moore say, in 500 years, I haven't shared this with anyone, but I'm going to share it with you, human.
I'm going to share it with you, you illiterate 19-year-old. I mean, she's not illiterate anymore, and she's not a human, but still. She's very special.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next trick up Hybern's sleeve is revealed after Nesta scries, and they realize that Hybern's army is poised to attack the human realm and slaughter everyone. Mm-hmm. And Hybern has purposely tired out Rhysand and the rest of the High Lord's armies by having them move camp so often. And all of it is just to waste their power and resources so that when it mattered, they would be too exhausted to winnow their armies and stop Hybern from attacking the human realm.
Yeah.
But instead, what Rhysand and Feyre come up with is to winnow out as many humans as possible to safety so that when Hybern does attack the first town across the border, there's no one there. And here's the quote. The wall is down. It is gone. It's a new world, and we must decide how we are to end this old one and begin it anew. Mm. We must decide if we will begin it by allowing those who cannot defend themselves to be slaughtered. If that is the sort of people we are, not individual courts, we as a Fey people, do we let the humans stand alone? And Hellion says, we'll all die together then. Good, Cassian said, glancing at Nesta. If I end my life defending those who need it most, then I will consider it a death well spent.
I love that line. I love him so much.
God damn it, Cassian.
Ugh, I love it.
Callias says, we'll need all the strength we have to fight Hybern. Wasting it on winnowing humans. And Feyre says, it is no waste. One life may change the world. Where would you all be if someone had deemed saving my life to be a waste of time? I pointed to Rhys. If he had deemed saving my life under the mountain a waste of time, even if it's only 20 families or 10, they are not a waste, not to me or to you.
Truth. Bomb.
Feyre.
Mic drop. She's like, listen.
That is queen shit.
I broke the curse.
Right. You owe me.
I was an illiterate 19-year-old human. I actually was those things.
Absolutely. This is also when Amarin announces that she found the key the Suriel was talking about and that she can not only nullify the cauldron, but also the person controlling it, aka the king. And nullifying him stops the entire Hybern army.
I love this. And this, listeners, is where we are going to end today's episode. Next week, we will pick up with the final battle. Oh my gosh, so many things that happen.
Oh my God.
And of course, our favorite, our last mastermind for basically Feyre and Rhysand's story as it wraps up and before we move into Nesta and Cassian.
Yes.
But we are so excited for next week's episode. I mean, I know there's more books, but Akawar is to me the culmination of Rhysand and Feyre. You know, that's their end of their story. So
absolutely.
We can't wait to see you next time.
Yes. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.